afternoon you again. Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. It is June 15th, 2025, and I typically play our Father's Day archive. I hate to say it. I forgot it was Father's Day. My bad. So for all the dads out there, we remembered at least it's only 12 o'clock. 12 o'clock.
That's right.
Yeah. Oops. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
And today we have two super guests for you. And just wanted to remind people that the archives are always up at wethepeopleradio.us. All of the sound files have had the commercials taken out, so they're fast to listen to. Probably about 40 minutes out of each hour is actually the program. And without that interruption, no fees to play it. I'm going to link an old show on today's, on June 15th, because there's been a lot of talk about the dark money that's funding all the riots and stuff that we're going to probably chat about a little bit today. And Arabella, if that is not a familiar name to you, you should probably. We did that show April 21st of 2024, all about the dark money in lefty politics and who's paying for all this stuff, who's bringing in the pallets of bricks and all that other jazz. I mean, how ridiculous. So our first guest, we're going to learn a lot of fun things today. We have two topics, basically. I should just give you that. Let's see. So we have Keith Gross. He is a former state prosecutor and National Guard member. He's on with us this hour. And then next hour, we have Michael McNamara. He has written a book, From Trauma to Joy, Life-Changing Lessons That Fellow U.S. Marines Taught Me. So kind of a patriotic day, and couldn't come soon enough. The day after Flag Day and, 250th anniversary of the Army and all that. And then, of course, all the protests about, the king and all that. So Keith is a legal analyst, former assistant state attorney, prosecutor for the state of Florida, served in the Montana National Guard. So we're going to learn some stuff about the National Guard. And he's the author of Dirt Roads to Runways, Defending the American Dream for the Next Generation. And I have more, but I'll do that on the next break. And his book is linked up, by the way, as are some websites and articles and things like that on today's program. So, Keith, sorry to take you away from the Father's Day festivities. I just kind of blew it. Nobody said anything. Uh-oh. And he's gone. Or he's trapped in there in the cone of silence. So we'll tell you more about Keith till we can find him. How about that? So much for the magic of technology. We were going to use Google Meet. It seemed like such a good idea. Or not. Maybe not a good idea. Kind of shows he's in there.
Hey,
there he is.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Yeah, there you are.
I can barely hear you, unfortunately.
Oh, hold on. How about that? Is that better? I can hear me really loud now.
Uh-oh. Did we lose him again?
Huh. Never fails. There's always something. Always something. 2 weeks in a row, we had a little something, something.
There we go.
There.
I think I'll give him a call. If it fails again, I'm going to give you a call.
Okay.
All right. You're loud and clear now, Keith. Good to have you on.
Or not. It's Bill. It's Bill doing it. It's the Father's Day blackout period. That's what's happening. He's going to call him on the real phone. I see him in there. Thanks, David. David's a brand new dad. He's probably exhausted, sleep deprived, et cetera, et cetera. All the things that go with that. A couple weeks ago, he texted us. I'm in the hospital with my wife, and I'm like, oh, wow. So we see him the next time. Is your wife okay? He's like, oh, yeah, she had a baby. Oh.
Okay, good old telephone.
We're back using the telephone. Imagine that.
Welcome back.
Keith. You know, it's no fun if we just start off and everything seems really smooth and stuff, because that just takes the fun out of it.
That's not our gig.
I don't know. It just never seems to be our shtick, does it? Oh, my goodness. So, Keith, sorry to take you away from Father's Day.
No worries. I'm happy to join you all. Thanks for having me.
Brief interlude in your Father's Day-ness. So, where do you want to start today? Like, throw it to you.
Well, we woke up, and apparently these no king protests work because we still don't have a king.
Thank goodness it worked.
I really, you know, there are just so many temptations, you know, wearing a flag shirt, wearing like a Burger King king hat. I don't know. It's just, I did wear my flag shirt all day yesterday, and Bill had his flag shirt on, and I have to tell you, we actually did a little recap at the end of the day, and the great shirt stretched from the age of 18 to mid 80s.
Yeah. We had like six or seven people spoke up about it.
They were just,
nice shirt.
Grocery store, church, they're like, great shirt. And they knew it was Flag Day.
That's good, see?
Yeah.
They still love America.
Yeah, and the younger ones were like, isn't it stupid? Can you believe they're protesting about kings? And I thought, huh, wouldn't have picked you to be annoyed by it, but good on you.
Yeah, I'm happy to see the diversity of thought. And, you know, I found myself wondering that for the whole day yesterday.
Yeah.
What exactly is this protest about? They say no kings, but they were also the people that wanted to put Kamala on the ballot, even though she never ran in a primary or got any votes.
Well, the kind of funny part is, if in fact he was a king, they would all be in the Bastille.
That's totally true.
So they wouldn't have actually been able to protest no kings.
Yeah, the irony was thick with that. I saw President Trump, he gave a press conference, and he said, well, I don't feel like a king. It sure would be more convenient. I'm going to get a lot of things done pretty quick. Instead of all this trouble, I could just dictate things.
All this congressness like and everything. I mean, super annoying. I know. I think they're just out of ideas. I truly believe, like, the ship of ideas has run aground.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we saw the same thing with, you know, like the gay pride movement, for example. After the gay population hit what I would say is equality in this nation, legalized marriage back in 2015, the far left on that side of things had to figure out new things to get folks riled up about. That's when all the gender nonsense happened.
Yeah, and that's kind of blowing up in everyone's face, too. Because there comes a point where everybody goes, what is it that you want again? And they, and you know, I realize a lot of the, oh, you know, man on the street interview type stuff is kind of is staged and it's for entertainment. But honestly, a lot of people really don't know. They're not sure why they're there protesting, like the king thing. I'll bet you if you ask people, they really don't know. They just don't like Donald Trump, and that was kind of a catchy title.
I put that on my my post on X yesterday. I said, hey, can anybody tell me exactly any of the things the president has done that would be things that a king would do? Because all I see is a president who is upholding the law, following the Constitution, and frankly being benevolent about things that he shouldn't even have to be patient about, like obeying court orders, even though the court order is clearly invalid, that they have no constitutional basis to restrict executive authority, and he's still patient and obeys the court order until it goes through the appeals process, where you know, typically it's going to get struck down in the appeals process anyway. Like the order we saw recently where the president was enjoined by, of course, a Northern California court saying the president shouldn't deploy National Guard in L.A. to stop rioters from burning down buildings and so forth. And that one was overturned on appeal within 12 hours. But nonetheless, you know, the president works to obey these silly orders. That's not what a king would do at all.
No.
Yeah, that's... and I don't know... I don't know what they want. I mean, obviously, it's funny because when they ask, like I like listening to Charlie Kirk and some of those guys because they're really good at kind of getting to the heart of the problem. And so the people who want to defend all the people here illegally when it comes to what is a crime, You know, just, yeah. It's like, well, they haven't committed any crimes. So is it legal to go into a country without a passport? No. Yeah, what do you say?
Yeah. Yesterday I saw a Politico article, and it said that President Trump was deploying a dormant law to force illegals to register and submit their fingerprints. And it puts them in a catch-22, where they either have to comply with the law and submit fingerprints, or they would be committing yet another crime. Well, goodness, I don't know if y'all realize it, but if a law is on the books, it's not dormant.
Right,
it
hasn't been
that just means previous presidents have been ignoring their constitutional duty to enforce the laws, because the constitutional oath that these presidents are all they all recite says, I'll uphold the Constitution. Part of the Constitution says the executive shall take care to uphold the laws, to see that the laws are carried out. And there's no exception for laws you don't like. If you don't like the law, but you're the president, you still have to carry out that law unless you can invalidate it to demonstrate that it's a overreach by the legislature into executive branch authority, for example. But if the law's on the books, the executive's supposed to enforce it. And so I find myself puzzled that people are fussing at President Trump for enforcing the law. Why aren't they hammering down Congress's door talking about, these are the laws we don't like, folks, let's rewrite them? It's not President Trump's fault that the law is on the books.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. And I think people have basically suffered over the last 4 years of picking and choosing and weaponizing the branches of government, and I think they're tired of it. And I think that's another reason you're seeing this resurgence of patriotism. I think people are proud of the country, and they want us to get back on the right track, and they see a lot of this stuff is just nonsense, and they want it to stop. And you still have the fringe out there that wants it to be the way it was, pick and choose, and we can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah, we saw Biden doing that with the sort of selective enforcement of immigration laws. He pretty much just didn't enforce a lot of them. And we saw it with Obama, where he actually came out with a whole unconstitutional program, DACA, which is something that I think a lot of us, you know, feel like, well, why would we blame these children that were brought in illegally by their parents? Of course it makes sense to give them some sort of nicer treatment than just, you know, deporting them. But at the same time, the president didn't have the authority to do that. Presidents don't get to write laws, and they don't get to decide which laws to enforce.
Unless they're a king.
Unless they're a king, exactly. So, you know, if we want to get things like that done in this country, the right way to do it is through Congress, not with the president.
Well, you know, with the DACA thing, I think initially, you know, people were like, well, you know, I'll say soft on the you know, rolling it over into a citizenship program. You know, it was kind of, well, that seems kind of fair. But it just seems like every time you give an inch, now all of a sudden that's the norm, and then we're gonna launch off into some other thing, and now you have to accept that too.
That's definitely been the case. I mean, look at, that's why we have these riots right now, all because we've got a president who says not closing the border is not okay. Allowing people to infiltrate our nation en masse illegally, that's not okay. We're going to start deporting them. And now people are losing their minds about it when it's what should be happening. That's what the law requires.
Well,
and if it had been enforced that way for the last 5 years, no one would be surprised.
Right. And if we didn't, the other part of it too is if we did this in another country, and that's always where they get brought up short. You know, when they ask them, hey, so if you go into Mexico, can you just go live there? Can you just walk to Mexico and just take up residence and vote and fly? And don't get me started on the fact that they're all flying foreign flags in their protest. They're here, and they're, quote, immigrants who want to stay here, but they're burning up the city. And a lot of these people are citizens. But burning up the city and waving a foreign flag, I just don't know that it gets any more tone deaf than that.
No, and it's just not what most Americans expect. You know, I think most Americans like the idea of lawful immigrants who want to join our nation and assimilate into our communities and be part of the fabric of American life. People don't like the idea of people that ignore the law, come across illegally, and then start making demands. And I think it was further inflamed by seeing how the Biden administration handed these people who were coming across our border illegally massive benefits, which were paid for by taxpayers who are scraping together to make ends meet, dealing with inflation and paying a lot of taxes. The last thing they want to see is their tax dollars being squandered and given to people who are breaking the law.
Yeah.
No, and as a result of that, look at the debt California is in right now. And, you know, here just, a year or two ago, we had this massive overrun on the budget. We were in such good shape,
big
which we
surplus.
Know. Oh, big surplus. But that was all a big
we're
lie.
Busy, we're busy spending, 17 years building high-speed rail, but not one foot of track has ever been laid, and giving medical benefits and all this other stuff to people who have broken into the country. And it's like, I think the taxpayers at pretty much, I'm going to say 85%, regardless of party, are like, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, we can't do that. And other states are doing it too.
Yeah, they are. You know, California is a good example of, they've got everything. If they would just keep the government out of business details, they could have so much more industry. But they're running industries off because they're so highly regulated in that area that it's just hard to do business there. And add that to the high tax burden.
Yep.
I'm not surprised that a lot of
and the lack of forest policy, and so, you know, we burn down half the place every year, and our congressman here in the first district just had to run a bill to stop the electric mandate so that people could actually buy the kind of cars they want here rather than be told by the government that they have to buy electric cars. It just, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, either you believe in freedom or you don't, and freedom includes the right of people to make choices that you disagree with. You can't say we believe in freedom and then we demand everybody drives a car that I personally approve of.
Yeah, and that doesn't make sense. We don't have the grid to support it. I mean, the logic behind it was not there. It was just a big, you know, obviously it was a big feel-good program. And, you know, I think a lot of times the calculation is, let's make this rule for the year 20-whatever, and by then I'll be out of office and I won't have to pay the price for the fact you can't do it.
And a lot of people forget, you know. It's kind of like the ban on under 25-horsepower gasoline engines they passed several years ago that took effect in 2025. And everybody kind of went to sleep on that, and all of a sudden, January of 2025, you go down to buy a new lawnmower, and guess what? You get to buy an electric one. What? I want a gas one. No, you can't buy those in California anymore. They're illegal. And that's kind of the way they do it now, is let's set it up for 5 years from now, and then everybody will go to sleep. And here we are.
It's a special kind of stupid out here. And I guess, you know, our program is heard in all sorts of places, but sometimes you really have to highlight the policy that might be coming your way. So when you hear your local government or your state government is going to do something stupid, don't put it past them. You might turn into us. So our guest, and you're in Florida, so go ahead and chuckle, Keith.
Yeah.
So our guest is Keith Gross. He is a former state prosecutor and a National Guard member. We're going to move on into the National Guard stuff, talking about the ICE riots and all that good stuff. His book is Dirt Roads to Runways, Defending the American Dream for the Next Generation. Highly recommend it. You can find it on the front page there at wethepeopleradio.us.
Man, I won't line today. I can't see it anyway.
Kind of true. I won't tow your line today. I can't see it anyway. It's been the last 4 years.
Yeah, no.
I've never really noticed that line before. So Bill said the first song was hard to hear, hard to understand, but it's the name of the song is Illegal Alien by Genesis. And frankly, the words are great, so you should probably just go look them up. All right, Keith. I've thrown down on my immigration songs. Now we can move on. But honestly, it has just gotten to a point of you know, just ridiculousness. We can't afford this. The crime is off the hook. As a you know, former assistant state attorney, what do you see from your vantage point on all this crime that's happening? And then we can't deport these guys.
Well, that's really the issue, is why aren't we deporting them? Why is that somehow viewed as abnormal? And when we see crimes committed, you know, often we'll see in the news where someone commits a crime, sometimes a violent crime, and then they're released, you know, the next day or sometimes even the same day on a relatively low bond or bail amount. And then they go out and then they reoffend. We saw this happening in New York City, for example. I think it was last summer. We saw people that were just released and released. And then they'd go back out and commit another violent crime. Most of America scratches their head and thinks, my goodness, why don't you keep these people in jail if they're committing violent crimes, especially repeatedly? That certainly checks the box to be a danger to the community, which is one of the reasons that a judge can deny bail. But too many jurisdictions let these folks go. And until we start connecting actions to consequences and punishing crime in this nation, we shouldn't be surprised that we're going to get more of it. And that goes for illegal immigration, too. You know, when Biden was catching these folks and letting them go, what message did that send to everyone else who wants to come into the United States, even if they don't have permission? It sends the message that, come on in, we're not going to do anything about it.
Exactly. And you know, they all cry, you know, due process. Well, I think due process starts with you committed a crime to get here. Let's solve that by deporting you and move on to the next one. Isn't that due process?
Yeah, I mean, that's been one of the frustrating things to watch, is misinformation spouted by the left. You know, first of all, they want to relabel illegal aliens as undocumented immigrants, and then they want to further confuse people by saying, you know, these are just attacks on the immigrant community. No, these are enforcement actions against people who entered our nation illegally. It's not anything improper. It's just enforcing the law. And they say, but you have to go through due process. And then they try to confuse people about what due process is. Due process in the context of illegal immigration is different than due process for the arrest of someone who commits, say, an armed robbery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that person gets arrested, they go to court, they say, I'm going to plead not guilty. Okay, well, now we've got the due process concern of forcing the government to prove their case that that person did, in fact, commit the crime they're accused of. When it comes to something like illegal immigration, the due process requirement is far more abbreviated. It's pretty straightforward to determine whether or not someone's a U.S. citizen. After you determine that, it's pretty straightforward to see whether or not they were admitted lawfully and have authorization to be here. If the answer to that question is no, end of process.
Right.
The only thing due is a deportation, if not a prison term before a deportation.
And it's not a court case before a deportation, is it?
It's generally an administrative proceeding. I mean, it's a matter of fact. You either have the authorization to be in our nation or you don't. It's not like there's some massive dispute of what happened. It's, are you here legally or not?
Well, I another one I've heard several times is these people are undocumented citizens, and they deserve, you know, due process. They are not citizens. Never were.
Well, not of this country.
No. No.
They deserve to be sent to their home
like
country.
Yeah.
They have plenty of documents.
Yeah.
The documents say that they have a passport in their home country, and they ought to be there, not here.
Right, right. And for that matter, a lot of them don't even have passports. They just walked here and came across the border, which, you know, when you think about it, like we had a lady who was from Ireland, and her family, or her husband, attempted to become U.S. citizens well, they had an attempt. They filed all the paperwork, and they waited, what, over 10 years
to
get that process done.
It was bad.
But they hung in there. They got it done. They spent the money. They did what they had to do, and they became citizens.
They couldn't leave. Like, somebody's mom died, and they could only leave the country a certain number of times while they were in that process. So there are a lot of restrictions, and there are a lot of rules.
Yeah, and for these folks to just walk across the border, and now all of a sudden they're in, they get to stay, that is totally not fair.
And jam up the immigration system so the people who are trying to do it legally can't get to it.
It doesn't, not to mention the folks that are in these other countries that want to come to the United States, that are on a list to come here, they have to wait if they want to do it legally. And to just jump the line, that's just not right.
Go back, though, Keith. I like your due process thing, because you know what? That is something that whole situation, they're just beating the drum on that. Well, these people are being deported without due process. What would it look like if you were the, state's attorney and you had people in the country that couldn't prove that they were citizens, and you're in charge of, making that process go. What does it look like? Or how does it work?
Well, due process is about resolving facts that are in dispute. Now, due process looks a lot different if, this person who commits a crime walks into court and says, yep, I plead guilty. All right, well, due process is real short. Now we just get to sentencing. But due process, when there's a fact in dispute, like, say, whether or not you're a U.S. citizen or whether or not you have the lawful authorization to be in the nation, that's just a simple analysis of records. Government records would be subpoenaed or requested from the appropriate agency. We've got, to your hypothetical, say somebody comes into court, they're going to be deported potentially, and they say, no, I have legal authorization to be here. So, okay, well, then let's identify this person, let's fingerprint them, let's figure out exactly who they are, and then let's reach out to the appropriate government agencies to see where was this person admitted and who issued them the documents that allowed them to come across, who issued them the visa to let them stay. And then it's just a very simple analysis of those documents that come back or the visa to see, is it a valid visa? Was it obtained properly? And has it expired?
And if that's a no, then you have to leave. And that's
exactly.
That's pretty simple.
And that's where, personally, I've been kind of frustrated with the way that this has been handled in what I would see as a very polite and benevolent fashion, yet still gets massive backlash. Because if we're going to follow all the laws and enforce them fully, if we catch someone and they don't, if they don't want to go back on their own, they wait around until they get arrested. They could be imprisoned for years, potentially, for violating a plethora of federal laws with criminal penalties, including massive fines and prison terms, and then they could be deported.
And
so the fact that they're just being rounded up and flown home the next day on a chartered flight, typically, that's the really polite way to handle this. We could lock them up for a few years first, then send them home.
Because the first thing they did was a felony. Crossing the border illegally is a felony, isn't it?
It is. And then failure to declare your presence to a U.S. official within, a certain number of days or hours after entering is illegal. Failing to check in, I think, on a monthly basis, illegal. Failing to submit to fingerprints, illegal. All of these are federal requirements. You mentioned Charlie Kirk earlier, and he actually did a great breakdown on X, on a post, where he went into all of the various crimes that these people could be charged and imprisoned for, but instead they're just being deported. So instead of saying thank you, they're burning down cars, looting buildings, because I'll tell you, God knows, looting a Nike store is definitely the way to fix immigration problems.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing sends the message like committing more crimes.
So when they, is that their workaround? They come across the border, they immediately turn themselves into immigration, they get a piece of paper that says you have to appear in court to determine your legal status, and that's in 2 years. Does that give them... at that point, they don't have to check in, they have to do anything, they're just going to stay here for 2 years. Is that
real?
Is that their workaround, or is that a real thing?
that was how the Biden administration tried to make it work. They called it a parole, basically, where somebody comes in, they say, I'm eligible for asylum, and here are my reasons. They were often coached through filling out the asylum request.
Right.
And in short, they were bending the law and really trying to expand the definition of asylum beyond what Congress authorized, which was an illegal use of executive power. You talk about king-like behavior. It's when you take a law that says you're allowed to do A, and you say, well, why can't we do A, B, C, and D also?
Isn't asylum
improper use of power?
Don't you have to apply for asylum from outside the country?
That was part of the rules that Biden essentially suspended, because that was generally an executive rule that required the remain in Mexico policy, as Trump put it, which said exactly that. Hey, if you want to apply for asylum, fine, apply, but do it from over there, and then we'll get back to you. But when they came across under the Biden administration, they were just saying, okay, we'll stamp your paper, give you a court date, and turn you loose. The thing is, the Trump administration doesn't have to wait around for that. The Trump administration, just like the Biden administration, was allowed to give these people parole, the Trump administration can revoke it and say, you know what, while your case is pending, you get to be over there. But we get back to the idea of punishing people who commit crimes, right? So if you come in and you apply for asylum, you have to sign a document under penalty of perjury attesting to certain facts, attesting to the idea that you're at least alleging facts that would be things that might make you eligible for asylum. Most of these people have no such reason to be in the nation. They're not going to be granted asylum, and they know that, and they're just making false statements in order to get a short period where they're allowed in the country, because we're not prosecuting these people for perjury. And that's how we could really solve this issue of due process when we talk about arresting people. You know, the next question is, well, are you authorized to be in the U.S.? If so, here, fill out this affidavit and declare in writing under penalty of perjury that you're authorized to be here. And if it turns out you're wrong, if it turns out you're lying, you're going to jail for perjury.
Well, when you apply for asylum, okay, so do the laws say that you can't just come here and then say, like, ollie, ollie, in free, right? I'm claiming asylum, because if you come across the border illegally, then you've committed a felony. Can you then claim asylum? Is that even possible? I know they've been doing it, but...
Yes. You know, you could enter the U.S. and immediately turn yourself over to the Border Patrol. You know, you walk 10 feet into the U.S., you see a Border Patrol agent, you sit down and say, I surrender, I want to apply for asylum. That's been sort of the historical way where this...
Because you kind of escaped from wherever you were.
Exactly. You know, you have some qualifying condition that you can use to apply for asylum. So the problem is that started happening so much that the president said, no, we can't allow people to just cross illegally, then sit down and claim asylum, because it'll clog up the courts for years and make a huge mess. So, you know, most of these people are not eligible for asylum, so we're going to change the rule. We're going to say, if you want to apply, you have to do it from over there. We're going to stop the process of you committing the crime of entering illegally first and then applying. We're going to tell you, you have to apply first. And so that's been the way it's been performed under the Trump administration. But under the Biden administration, they were just giving these people basically a free pass to enter into the nation, remain in the nation.
Sure.
And that's how we got this huge influx of millions of illegals who are committing crimes all over the country. And we've had people murdered, people hit by vehicles. You know, I saw it when I was in the state prosecutor's office. It seemed like every other person we had in court was someone who was arrested for driving with no driver's license. And when you looked at their records, you could see why. The state of Florida would not issue a driver's license to an illegal immigrant. So these people just drove around with no license at all. Most of the time they didn't speak English, so I can't imagine they were following our traffic laws. And surprisingly frequently, they were driving drunk, blowing through stoplights, and causing major danger to the community when they shouldn't have even been there.
Hmm. And is there any such thing as economic asylum? I mean, I can't make a living in my country, so I want asylum to come here.
No, there certainly isn't. That's not what Congress included, because think about the practical application of that.
Exactly.
It's true. Virtually everyone in China and everyone in India would suddenly be eligible to come to the U.S. because you can make a better living here than you can in India. Well, the U.S. can't handle a billion and a half new immigrants. We can't even handle 10 million immigrants because we can barely cover the cost to put our own kids through school and handle health care for our own citizens. we sure as heck can't afford to foot the bill for another billion people if they wanted to come into our nation.
Just come rolling in.
That's not what our laws are designed for.
We have to take another quick break, but when we come back, I'm curious about the driver's license thing before we leave that, because California said, okay, everybody gets to have a driver's license. You don't need to be a citizen. It's no longer a real form of ID. You have to get real ID, show your stuff for that. But they wanted to make sure everyone had a driver's license because they thought that was going to, I don't know, make things better somehow. Maybe you could give us your legal perspective on that when we come back. I know probably your regular perspective, same as ours, is what the heck. But we will return. Our guest is Keith Gross. He is the author of Dirt Roads to Runways, Defending the American Dream for the Next Generation. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Like me and you, so let the voice of freedom sing out through this land. This is our country. From the East Coast to the West Coast, down the Dixie Highway, back home. This is our country.
Kind of important to remember. You know, obviously people are proud of the countries that they come from, and that doesn't mean you can't feel good about that. I mean, you don't have to, you know, pretend you don't have roots someplace else. But if you're going to live in a country, you should probably like it.
Yeah, and try to conform to our culture. Don't come here and,
or at least meaningfully
try to
contribute with your own.
Yeah, and make it your culture. It's not your culture.
Look what the Irish have brought, right? Love of potatoes.
Good whiskey.
Lots of fun.
Yeah.
Good whiskey, right? Terrific holiday once a year in March.
The love of potatoes.
We let everybody join.
Notre Dame football.
There you go.
There you are.
See? That's what I'm saying. You can bring your stuff. Just don't bring your, you know, murder book and the rest of it. Yuck. So what about the driver's licensing, Keith, from a legal standpoint?
Well, from a legal standpoint, I usually wonder about these state governments, you know, these government officials who offer driver's licenses to illegal aliens. They know they're illegal aliens, yet they give them a document that allows them to evade certain detection mechanisms and remain in the nation. When did we stop considering that a federal crime? Aren't they aiding and abetting a fugitive? Because it's a federal crime to enter and remain in our nation illegally. If you aid and abet someone committing a federal crime, you are also eligible for prosecution. Why didn't we prosecute these people? Why did we let this become the norm?
Well, what we did was we doubled down here, and I think in other places, because now you can, quote, register to vote, although most of it is like kind of automatic, at the DMV. So here these guys waltz in, hey, I want my driver's license, and then shazam, I'm a voter.
It's wild, really. I mean, I see the reasoning. It sounds like a decent idea to give people driver's licenses, because on one hand, you're thinking, well, they're here anyway. We aren't the federal government. We don't really deport people, and we've got all these people living here, so we might as well teach them the rules of the road, give them a driver's license, tell them they better buy insurance so that when they rear end somebody while drinking, at least, you know, the person that gets rear-ended can have their car fixed by an insurance company. So I get it. You know, it sounds like a decent idea, but the reality is it's just encouraged a whole lot of additional illegal immigration. You can't give people a lot of benefits and then act surprised that they're here. That's why a lot of people believe that illegal immigrants come to our nation in the first place. You mentioned sort of economic asylum. They're coming here because they want more money. They want more stuff. Even Chuck Schumer, you know, you can see videos of him online, and I posted a few on my social accounts where it's not that far in the past that Chuck Schumer was saying that the number one reason that people illegally immigrate in the United States is to take advantage of our social programs, our medical care, and all the benefits that they receive when they get here. I think anyone with common sense in America knows that that's still true, but now Chuck Schumer's changed his tune, and he wants all the illegals he can get, and I think it's because of what you just highlighted. They sign them up to vote. They're going to sign them up to be counted in the census. They're ultimately going to use them to get more power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is just weird and dirty. And talk about tipping the balance of power into chaos, because you have people who know nothing about really the culture, the rules, what a representative republic is all about. And now they're going to be voting for the representatives. And I think we can see some of the results of that. Jasmine Crockett, out there, you know, I mean, good grief. I mean, we're just kind of going downhill on a lot of that. I don't want to run out of time, but we always run out of time. What the heck? Why does time go so fast when you guys are on with us? But I want you to tell us a little bit about your book.
So the book being is terrible a promoters. Overview of, you know, it's a biography, basically. I kind of walk people through where I came from and where I grew up. And, you know, we talk about Florida. Yeah, I grew up in Florida. And most people, they develop this image of palm trees and the beach. But the part of Florida I grew up in, we jokingly call Lower Alabama in North Florida. And, I mean, we've got about as many cows as we have people around there. It's just a different image than what most people have in their minds of Florida. And California is pretty similar. You've got a lot of agricultural areas that aren't downtown L.A. or Santa Monica Beach.
Yeah.
You know? People, they don't understand that it's kind of a different world in most of the state. And, you know, I was raised by humble people. Farmers and store clerks were my family, and they had common sense wisdom. And so I thought it'd be a good opportunity to share some of that common sense wisdom in a book and also tell my story. You know, I went from a family that had nothing, and I built multiple national companies, scaled those across the country, sold them off to private equity, and I've done it repeatedly. And that is the American dream. You can come from nothing, work your tail off, grow a major company. That is the American dream. I've lived it. And the American dream that I've lived is becoming less available for future generations, because the bigger we have, the bigger government we have, the less freedom we're going to have.
Yeah.
And every year it seems that government gets bigger. It's kind of like a zip tie, where these freedoms, they just get smaller and smaller and smaller. And it's easy to go that way. It's really hard to take those freedoms back once they're lost. And so I think any of us who have the opportunity should be pushing towards more freedom, trying to reduce the size of government. And if it's not because you believe in freedom, it should at least be because you believe in math. We can't afford this much government. Look at our federal debt. We're either going to have to tax our citizens at an insanely high amount, or we're going to have to seriously cut the number of things that our government does, because we just can't afford this much government. And I don't think we need this much government.
No.
I think we should have more self-reliance, independent thinkers, and people that just take accountability for their own actions and the outcomes of their lives.
And before people draw conclusions, so you grew up with a single mom, you worked your way through school, served in the National Guard, and made a life. I mean, you weren't sitting down and sliding uphill, it doesn't sound like, in any part of this.
Not a bit. I worked my way through school. I racked up massive student loan debt, like most people do when they had to put themselves through school. And I paid that student loan off after we sold one of our companies. I didn't expect the government to forgive it. I promised to pay it back, and I did. I think doing what you promised to do is something that too many people have forgotten is important. Self-reliance, self-responsibility, that's what made America great. And we shouldn't expect the government to hand us anything. We should go out there and build stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's kind of a slippery slope we've been on for a long time, is we've allowed people to sit back and depend on government handouts, because they don't have to work if they don't, you know, they may not have the perfect life they dreamed of, but they're able to basically get by on government subsidies without contributing. basically.
And smoke pot all day. Let's not forget that. My favorite inclusion. So frustrating. But you know, Keith, the other piece of this puzzle is as you built these businesses, because a lot of the narrative we hear now, and especially coming out of our colleges, is you have things because other people don't. Like, you took it from them so you could have more, but...
Or you built it on the back of other people.
But I would say you've probably employed a lot of people over the years.
We sure have. And, you know, we've grown franchise businesses largely. And that growing a franchise company is different. You know, you're helping other people grow their own small businesses. And I can't tell you, there are dozens of people who came to us. They wanted to grow a business. They bought one of our franchises, and they became millionaires. Not because
it was easy
necessarily, but because they had someone that understood the business concept, that was willing to teach them. I mean, that's what a franchisor does. You train people, you help them become successful. And there are dozens of people who became millionaires. They worked hard to get there, but it's also possible because they joined a successful franchise system that helped them leverage an existing brand and existing knowledge to get into a business that otherwise they wouldn't have been able to get into, you know. And I think it's telling that there is a growing divide where some people just, like you said, they expect a lot of government assistance, and other people appreciate the opportunity to go out and build their own thing. I think one of the greatest dangers we have in society is that comfort that people get when their needs are met, you know, through like the SNAP or food stamps programs, for example. The way it's done now, it allows people to have massive choices in what they're going to eat. When my grandparents were broke way back in the day, they got a can of pork and a bag of rice. They didn't get a little credit card where they can just go down to the supermarket and buy what they want. And so this program has just changed a lot. But ultimately, the problem is this: if the government gives you everything you need, it's a pretty short path for the government to be able to dictate every detail of your life.
And take it all away.
You've got to maintain independence.
Yeah, and then take it all back if the wind blows the other direction. The hard part, I think, with so much of that, I mean, for heaven's sakes, our farm bill is 80% welfare programs.
It is.
I mean, that should tell us something.
And people just aren't motivated to get off of it the way they used to be, because now you get to buy anything you want. I mean, they're just now trying to close the loopholes where you can't buy, you know, like hot prepared foods and sodas and all sorts of garbage that people probably shouldn't be eating. But nonetheless,
God forbid,
shouldn't be buying for them.
God forbid you're a single able-bodied adult and they want you to work. Or volunteer.
Yeah, I don't know why that's demonized.
Or volunteer, and that's considered like, you know, you're some sort of a hater if you would advocate that. And it's like, how are we helping people by not doing that, by not including that as a requirement?
Well, and then a lot of these programs incentivize not doing anything.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, have more kids, get more money. You know,
that helped the black community a lot.
Yeah, we have to stop incentivizing laziness, basically. I mean, people have to get that willpower back to go out and do something on their own. It feels good to earn something and say, hey, I earned this. I bought this, but I earned it. It wasn't given to me. But so many people now are like, no, I'm okay with that. Just give it to me. I'll take it. You know, we got to stop that.
President Reagan used to say that. He would say, the best social program I can imagine is a job. And he talked a lot about the dignity of work. And mm-hmm. there's something to that.
There really is.
That's an important thing for people to get back to.
Yeah, I think most of us when we were kids, you know, that was the thing, was find a job. And then you did the math, right? You were making, I don't know what we were making.
You got
like
to earn your own money.
You were making, what, a dollar an hour? 75 cents. We're old. So, you know, you're making next to nothing, but you do the math. Right, you figure out, I worked this many hours and I'm going to get this much money, and you get it. And then we'll never forget it, my stepdaughter, she's like, who is FICA and how did they get all my money? And honestly, that is an amazing lesson an amazing lesson. And I would never consider her really super conservative. She lives in Maine. But the funny part was, I just got this rant from her a couple weeks ago. I am spending so much in taxes. She was all mad about her tax bill. And then you start looking at where is it going. And then the wheels come off the ideological gravy train, if you will.
Well, that's the same story with my daughter. She was harping on me one time about, you know, people need to make a livable wage.
Oh,
and
yes.
I'm like, you know, that's a slippery slope. And then a few years later, she opened a bakery and said, you know, I can't afford to hire employees. I have to, you know, my husband has to work there because I can't afford it. We can't afford to pay all this.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just a reality check.
Well, I don't want to cut off the replaying of Government Cheese as our outgoing song for Keith. But I do want to thank you for coming on with us. And Keith,
yes,
we should do this
Keith.
Again. We never even got to talk about the National Guard. Boo. I had questions. We will chat with you again. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. Y'all too.
Thanks a lot. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
Give a man a free house and he'll bust out the windows, put his family on food stamps now. He's a big spender, no food on the table, and the bills ain't paid, cause he's spending on cigarettes and PGA. They'll turn us all into beggars, cause they're easier to please. They're beating our people.